You're listening to a podcast from the Brookings Institution.
Okay, if we could have your attention, we're going to mobilize here. Good morning. I'm Darrell West, Vice President of Governance Studies and Director of the Center for Technology Innovation at the Brookings Institution, and I'd like to welcome you to our forum on personalized medicine and health information technology. This week in his State of the Union address, President Obama highlighted the importance of innovation for long-term economic development. He made the argument that innovation is vital for job creation and building the industries of tomorrow. Areas that offer tremendous hope in this regard are genomics, medicine, and the life sciences. Scientists have cracked the human genome and are identifying genetic markers associated with particular diseases. This has fueled efforts to personalize medicine and target treatments in a more effective manner. With these advances, we are learning how to tailor treatments based on individuals' genetic structures. Yet there remain several barriers to progress in this area. Some national policies were developed years before these recent advances in gene sequencing, electronic health records, and information technology. And so as a result, we have not taken full advantage of the opportunities that we face. Today, we are putting out a paper that makes a number of recommendations, and I just want to summarize the highlights of that. I'll refer you to the actual paper for additional details. But we argue that it is vital to connect genomic and other personalized information to electronic health records. Electronic health records and other electronic documents are moving to center stage in medical care. The administration has invested more than $40 billion in that effort. We argue that we need to integrate data on genetics and drug effectiveness into patients' electronic records. This will give physicians the most up-to-date information and help them target drug treatments on those most likely to benefit. We need better data sharing networks so that physicians and scientists can connect different information systems. Currently, we have discrete data systems in various parts of medicine, but they are not well integrated. It's hard to determine what works and how to assess costs and benefits. So we need better knowledge management systems to help us analyze the overall contours of healthcare. We argue that we need to enable rapid learning feedback mechanisms in clinical care. Right now, it is difficult to integrate advances in medical research into treatment guidelines that are accessible to physicians. We need better feedback devices for physicians and patients on what works and how they can incorporate the latest research into medical care. By integrating databases, this will help them learn from the experiences of other patients. We argue about the need to improve our reimbursement system, in which we need to better align reimbursement with national goals. We need to devote more attention to preventive medicine and positive health outcomes. We know that incentives matter in terms of personal behavior, and value-based reimbursement would give physicians and hospitals more of an incentive to focus on good health. Finally, we suggest the need to think through privacy rules. We all recognize how important privacy is and how important it is to patients. People fear discrimination and not keeping their medical information confidential. As a result of that, in 2008, Congress passed the Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act, prohibiting the use of genomics in employment, hiring, and firing. We need to strike the right balance, though, between privacy and innovation. There was a 2009 Institute of Medicine report that concluded that current HIPAA rules impede health research. And we suggest that we need to revise privacy rules to distinguish health research from medical practice and allow for linking data from multiple sources for research purposes in ways that protect privacy and confidentiality. So we suggest that the current administration is missing an opportunity to make progress on personalized medicine. We need to do more to link personalized medicine with health information technology. The president talked a lot about innovation, but the administration needs to follow up with concrete actions addressing policy barriers to personalized medicine. So if you want additional details on that argument and some of the recommendations that we make, please consult our paper. This morning, we have assembled an outstanding set of distinguished leaders to discuss personalized medicine and health information technology. We are pleased to welcome Dr. David Brailer to Brookings. He is the chairman of Health Evolution Partners, a San Francisco-based investment fund that focuses on innovation and the health economy. Prior to that, many of you know he served as the National Health Information Technology Coordinator in the Department of Health and Human Services. While there, he led a bipartisan effort that moved the U.S. healthcare system towards greater transparency, quality, and efficiency. He has been an early leader in the use of the Internet to share health information. He founded CareScience, developed it, and brought it to market as an IPO. He clearly is a smart and talented guy, and we're all looking forward to hearing what he has to say on these important topics. Our format is as follows. We're going to hear from Dr. Brailer, and then we will have time for some questions, both from me as well as from you in the audience. We will then follow his comments with an expert panel of distinguished leaders from academia and the private sector, and I will introduce them at the beginning of their panel. So please join me in welcoming Dr. Brailer to the Brookings Institution.
Thanks, Daryl. It's great to be with you all. For those of you that know that I've given talks from my BlackBerry in the past, I've upgraded to an iPad now. You might have seen something that I think draws this whole conversation into a very sharp point, which was a paper published in The Lancet last year that showed that a child born in the year 2000 has a greater than 50% chance of living beyond age 100. And I really think if there's a testament to innovation in healthcare, it's that. We saw life expectancy at around 67 years in 1970. So more or less we've added year per year about a year of life expectancy. Not all healthcare innovation, for sure. We have a saner, more civil society than we have in the past. But if you just go back and think about things from penicillin all the way up through dialysis and ventilators and all the great things that we believe in, they've had a great impact, although quite lagged. And I use that as a focal point because I think when we have a conversation about the next 100 years of life expectancy, I'm doubtful it will be things like molecules or machines. I think a lot of it will be information, whether it's information that's gleaned through phenotypic analysis, genotypic analysis, information that is used like HIT expects it to be in terms of decision support and things like that, which I want to detail. My frame of reference is that's where the next 100 years comes from. Now, one of the things that we have to think about whenever we think about long life expectancies is that there's a downside. I learned this when I was in the administration, and as many of you know who have been in government or are now, you don't always just do your own job. You have to go do all the other jobs that you're expected to do. And one of them was to go around and to support community efforts that were doing things. And so I was sent once, excuse me, to Utah to speak at a centenarian event where literally 85 centenarians were in the room celebrating the next year. And the MC was 104, and he had been MCing this event for some time, and his wife was in the front row, and she was 102 or 103, and they'd been married 80 years. And so when he handed the podium to me, I decided I was going to rib him a little bit and said, George, you know, let's be honest, you guys have been married 80 years. You know, is there passion? Is there love? You know, are you guys, what's the secret of that long marriage? And he came back up to the podium and elbowed me aside and said, completely setting me up for a spike, said, well, Dr. Brailer, we haven't been in love for a long time and the passion's gone, but we are staying together until the kids die. Okay, so what is health information technology? And it's true. Health information technology and personalized medicine have in common. I would say at the 10,000-foot level, let's just recognize that both of them are certain to happen on a widespread basis. You might not agree with that. You might think that there is some chance that some of these won't happen. But I think over some period of time, the use of more information in our industry is inevitable. Therefore, I think the other thing they have in common is a huge question mark over how they will be used and a much larger question mark over who uses them and to what end. And to me, this is the issue where policy should be interested. My sense, my personal view, I brought this to the health information technology movement, is that we should not focus our efforts on making the inevitable faster. What we should do is steer the curve of change to make sure that it lands in a place where we want this to happen. And if you want to think about health information technology,